And Sukracharya is the spiritual master of all these personalities, is in the same line. Or personalities like him.
There, yeah, specifically, in Bhagavatam specifically say that actually they, because of poor intelligence, they were more inclined for material gain, and so they did whatever Hiranyakashipu asked him to, say.
Yeah.
So they, in fact, they were actually criticized. In the Bhagavatam purports and all Prabhupada has said that they were ready to give up their actual religious principles to favor Hiranyakashipu.
Yes.
He was in power and they were.
Yes. Yes. And that's what I'm saying, that whenever even the demons reject the spiritual process, the guru, even though they're on a material platform, but if they reject their guru and just do what any powerful man says, it may not properly be following the scriptures, that's a fault. That's what Bali Maharaj was accused of. Right? That's the problem. That although they're demons, they have a guru that keeps them within the Vedic process. Even they're in Tamaguna, Rajagun or Satvagun. In chapter 17 of the Gita, it describes that one's faith is according to one's mode of material nature, and according to that, one performs sacrifices, charity and austerities, either in sattva, rajas or tamas. Right? And if they do that, dedicating it to the Supreme, all of them will progress. Now, I'll read that verse. Right? So as soon as they step out of that and disregard their spiritual master and the Vedic teacher, spiritual master means he's teaching the Vedas, the scriptures, as soon as they step out of that, they're at fault. And that's what Bali Maharaj was accused of. Now, I'll read this verse here. It says okay. Let's look at, just before I go there, I just want to read one little quote from text 13, right, of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, that although I'm the creator of this Varna system, I'm the non-doer being unchangeable. So the Lord has again expressed he is transcendental, but he created this Varna realm for those in sattva, rajas or tamas to follow, because if they follow that, they're following the path that leads to him, even the demons. And therefore, they all have their spiritual masters who understand that even in Tamagun, your sacrifices, austerity and charity must somehow be connected to the rituals of the Vedas, which gradually elevate everyone to the Supreme. Right? And Krishna created that system, even for the demons. And there, and he says, in the purport, Prabhupada says, human society is similar to any other animal society, but to elevate men from the animal status, the above-mentioned divisions are created by the Lord for the systematic development of Krishna consciousness. The tendency of a particular man toward work is determined by the modes of material nature which he has acquired. Now, so to elevate even the demons, they're in a human body, but even to elevate the demons above the animalistic way of life, they also come under this training somehow within the Vedic process. And you see that even personalities like, you know, Kamsa, Jarasandha, you know, so many persons, they're very strict followers of the Varnasrama system, under a spiritual master. Now, let's go to 17, where we've heard that there are, one can perform sacrifice, charity, austerity, under the rules and regulations of the Varna Ashram set up by Krishna to help one gradually elevate. And one can do that under any of the three modes of material nature. Then Krishna says this. Right? And within that, they're either worshipping demigods, demons, or ghosts and spirits, right? And then he says this. Now, he describes that in verse 5 and 6 of chapter 17, he says, he talks about those who don't follow the scriptures and they don't follow the principle of a spiritual master. Spiritual master means they may have a material conception of the absolute truth, but they understand that the Varna Ashram is guiding them to the absolute truth, and therefore they always chant Om Tat Sat. He says, those who undergo severe austerities and penances not recommended in the scriptures, performing them out of pride and egoism, who are impelled by lust and attachment, who are foolish and who torture the material elements of the body as well as the super soul dwelling within, are to be known as demons. Now, that type of demon, Prabhupada describes in his purport, it says that persons of normal mental condition must obey the scriptural injunctions. Those who are not in a position, in such a position, neglect and disobey the scriptures and manufacture their own ways of austerities and penances. One should always remember the ultimate end of the demoniac people, as described in the previous chapter, 16, is that they're thrust into the lower species of life, into the hellish planets. And hellish existed, right? Now, Prabhupada says, the Lord forces them to take birth in the wombs of demoniac persons. Consequently, they will live by demoniac principles life after life without knowing their relationship with the Supreme Person of Godhead. If, however, such persons are fortunate enough to be guided by a spiritual master who can direct them to the path of Vedic wisdom, they can get out of this entanglement and ultimately achieve the goal. So if these demoniac persons that are just described, are performing all sorts of sacrifices, austerity and charity in this unauthorized way, if somehow or another they can be guided by a spiritual master teaching them to follow the Vedic path, they will ultimately reach the supreme goal. So this Vedic process to have a spiritual master is also meant for the demons. Therefore, and even if that spiritual master, he may understand all of these processes will get them the temporary results. The demons want the temporary results. Okay, let them get their temporary result, but according to the Vedas, in such a way that we know that they'll be gradually elevated. And even currently, they'll remain above the animal principle of life. Such a spiritual master, they may only have a material understanding of the absolute truth, but the absolute truth is impersonal. Still, if that demon neglects that spiritual master, they're at fault. What is that fault? They'll be cast into demoniac species of life and they'll never ever progress towards the absolute truth. That's the fault. They're doomed. They're absolutely ruined, life after life, perpetually. Forever, until they come to the point to accept the spiritual master, even though he, like Supracharya, actually may have a material conception, at least at some stage, of the absolute truth. Therefore, it's a fault. Then, right? So then, at the end, therefore, Krishna says, that in text number 23, from the beginning of creation, the three words Om, Tat, Sat were used to indicate the supreme absolute truth. These three symbolic representations were used by Brahmanas while chanting the hymns of the Vedas and during sacrifices for the satisfaction of the Supreme. Now, so these Brahmanas are such persons like Sukracharya, who's guiding the demons. He's also Om Tat Sat. Anything he's doing, he's chanting the Vedic mantras, Om Tat Sat is all there. And he knows that ultimately it is a purifying process by which the demoniac society is kept above the animal species of life, even though they're demons. They're being purified and they're heading towards the Supreme. Now, Prabhupada says, it has been explained that penance, sacrifice, charity and foods are divided into three categories, goodness, passion and ignorance. But whether first class, second class or third class, they are all conditioned, contaminated by the modes of material nature. So what to speak of the demons, also those in sattva, they're all contaminated and conditioned. When they are aimed at the Supreme, Om Tat Sat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Eternal, they become means for spiritual elevation. In the scriptural injunctions, such an objective is indicated. These three words, Om Tat Sat, particularly indicate the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vedic hymns, the word Om is always found. So, now of course, you see, so, as we see in the Prabhupada quotes. Now, we've heard this quote from in today's purport that the Varnasram is meant to satisfy Lord Vishnu. And then there's another quote from the Rig Veda, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sadapasanti Subhyo Diviva Chakshuradutam Tad Viprasal Panyavo Jagaram Sasmindate Vishnu Yat Paramam Padam. The lotus feet of Vishnu are the supreme devotional platform. Right? So the Vedas are teaching that the supreme platform of the absolute truth is Vishnu. But if one has a material conception, one may consider that Shiva is equal to Vishnu. Right. So in the material conception of life, as we read that, right? So we go back here, verse chapter 4, text number 12, in the purport, Prabhupada says, there is a great misconception about the gods or demigods of this material world. Men of less intelligence, although passing as great scholars, take these demigods to be various forms of the Supreme Lord. So then you get these priests, spiritual masters, guiding people, either in tamas, rajas or sattva, to perform the Vedic activities, and the priest is dedicating them to the Supreme, the Absolute Truth, knowing that they must, by the words Om Tat Sat, but they think that Om Tat Sat can be Vishnu, it can be Shiva, because they think that the various forms of the demigods are equal with or non-different from Vishnu. And it doesn't matter which one you worship. But that is not that, although that's, you know, in one concept, everything is one with God. So, therefore, the Vedic process is, you actually, if someone wants some temporary result, you are, it is therefore recommended in the Vedas, you want a good husband, worship Shiva, you want a good wife, worship Uma. It's actually recommended to do that. Because the Vedas understand, these demigods, they're part and parcel of God. In other words, they are, you are still worship. As Krishna said, everyone follows me in all my, in every respect. If you worship Shiva to get a good husband, who is Shiva? He's a manifestation of Krishna, his potencies. It is God appear in that particular feat. It's not the full manifestation of the personality of Godhead, but there is nothing which is not different from God. In that sense, but in that sense, they're authorized. Okay, you cannot understand the transcendental God, then I will appear in this material form as Shiva, worship me in that way. At least you're getting your understanding, higher authority, following the Vedas. And therefore, it's not wrong for them to do that. On the higher level, when the priest, the guru, is more elevated, but to speak of the followers, they understand, yes, everything is maybe one with God, the demigods may be one with God, in the sense that there can be nothing but the Supreme Lord. And they're, in one sense, part and parcel, little part and parcels, servants of the Supreme Lord, and sometimes referred to as limbs of the Lord. But on the higher sense, they're insignificant. And those demigods, even Shiva and Brahma, consider themselves very insignificant and worship the Lord as unlimited. Like that. So therefore, so in one sense, they're not actually. Even that impersonal understanding, it's a beginning understanding which is acceptable by the Vedas. If you want to understand the sunshine, if you want to understand the sun, if one doesn't understand the sun globe and the demigod of the sun god, it's not wrong to understand the sunshine, which is what one is able to understand. That's not wrong. So, but it will be very foolish, you know. So, an initial impersonal understanding of the Lord at least is the beginning. Therefore, the highest, every person who comes to sattva, they're initiated. They can be trained as a brahmana because a brahmana must understand Brahman, that there is a oneness to all existence, material and spiritual, and that oneness is Brahman. So the beginning point of spiritual life is at least to understand Brahman. Without that at least Brahman understanding, then you have the Buddhist philosophies or materialistic philosophies, where even the Brahman conception is not there, that one underlying spiritual energy, Brahman underlying. Then to understand the variety of Brahman, that is the next step. That's where we enter into personism. So, even amongst the gurus and spiritual guides within the Varnashram, many of them only have that impersonal understanding. Now, as long as they're not Mayavadis, in other words, they're, you know, if they have a material, at least a material concept, you know, a concept of Brahman, the impersonal feature of the Lord, that's something that's, that is recommended, that one can at least try to meditate upon that. As long as they're not preaching against, you know, the envious soul, they're opposed to a personal concept of love. They just don't understand that. They don't know of that. That's okay. But if they become opposed to that, they create a philosophy of Mayavada. You know, the personal form of God is Maya. That's a different thing. They can enter into the realm of offensiveness. Okay? But just to try and approach an impersonal understanding in the beginning is the beginning of spiritual life. So therefore, on that point, there's no fault for a spiritual teacher within the Varnas realm if they only have an impersonal understanding. Actually, if they have at least an impersonal understanding of Brahman, if they don't have that, they're not even qualified to be Brahmanas. They shouldn't be teaching anything of the Vedas. You know, if one doesn't even have the impersonal understanding of Brahman, spirit, that spiritual substance which underlies all existence, they're not qualified to be a Brahmana, because Brahmana means they're on the Brahman platform of understanding. And if they're not on the Brahman platform of understanding, they have no qualification to teach anything in the Vedas. As the Brahmanas are supposed to study and teach it. So they have to have minimum that. But nearly everyone has that. That's the beginning point. So that's not wrong, because it's not wrong because it's a beginning point. You can't say the beginning point is wrong. They have to at least have that, otherwise they can't teach anything. So therefore, that is not a fault. That means they've attained a very elevated level. Therefore, it's described in the Bhagavad Gita that amongst many, many millions among men, one may endeavour for perfection, to understand this Brahman. That's called perfection. They're called siddhas. They have attained perfection, or they understand Brahman. So, now, then let's look a little bit more at Sukracharya, what the Bhagavatam is saying about what is his understanding. So, okay. Let's look at chapter 20. Text number 1 and 2. All right, now. In chapter 20, we heard in text 1 that Bali Maharaj, he had been advised by Sukracharya not to give everything in charity to Lord Vamanadeva. Bali remained silent and then deliberated, and then he replied. Now, Srila Prabhupada, Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kaur remarks that Bali Maharaj remained silent in a critical point. How could he disobey the instruction of Sukracharya, his spiritual master? So again, he's always referred to as a spiritual master because they understand that everything must be dedicated to the absolute truth. Although sometimes they only have an impersonal understanding of that. Now, Bali Maharaj considered that Sukracharya was no longer to be accepted as a spiritual master, for he had deviated from the duty of a spiritual master. According to Shastra, the duty of the guru is to take the disciple back home, back to Godhead. If he is unable to do so and instead hinders the disciple in going back to Godhead, he should not be a guru. All right? One should not become a guru if he cannot enable his disciple to advance in Krishna consciousness. All right. So there we see that Bali Maharaj had on the spiritual platform, he through the grace of Prahlad Maharaj actually had a spiritual concept of the Absolute Truth. That he's personal and that he had appeared before him to accept his devotional service, which is also spiritual by nature. Therefore, but Sukacharya, as we said, the two reasons which we quoted, one, it's mentioned in chapter 23 of the 8th canto, that he was addicted to fruitful activities. Right? Sukacharya. And two, he was so affectionate to Bali Maharaj that out of affection for him, he thought he was going to, you know, fall. He didn't want him to miss out or what have you, you know, for the things that he was addicted to materially. He was also very affectionate to Bali Maharaj. He was trying to prevent him from losing and falling. So, now, in regard to that, we see that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that because of a previous offence, that previous offence to the Lord made it unfavourable for him to experience or, you know, to appreciate the bliss of love of God. So, bhakti, at this particular point, somehow or another, Sukacharya is not realizing the opportunity, he's not realizing this personal feature of the Absolute Truth. Right. So, we won't get into what that offense is, there may be a series of, but you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti is pointing out that because of a previous offence, in his role, in his relationship with Lord Vishnu, some offence meant that this personal nature of the Absolute Truth, where you can develop this loving reciprocation, that was not being revealed to him at this point. I just... So, text number 8, 2014. It says it like this. I'll tell you. He says, "Daiva Prahita" means that Sukacharya was influenced by previous offence, unfavourable for developing the bliss of prema to the Lord. Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary to 8.20.14. Bali Maharaj, in the presence of Lord Vamadev, because of his being blessed by Prahlad Maharaj, he's gone from the material platform of understanding the Absolute Truth, and he's realizing this spiritual aspect of the Absolute Truth. So he's gone in that direction, but Sukacharya hasn't gone with him. He stayed on a material concept, a bit of an impersonal reciprocation with the Absolute Truth. I can pause for a minute. Do you come back? I'll just pause. Do you want to pause that?
Sorry.
You can pause it. You're getting some. Yeah. That's your one?
No.
Yeah, just pause it. I don't want you to miss this. Now, Nirmala, did you turn yours on? Because you've got the full, because we're here about 2 o'clock. So Naveen, you'll be able to upload Nirmala's copy as well? Yeah? So that's just started from where we left off. So, at the point, for any demon, including Bali Maharaj, who was following Sukracharya, Sukracharya is properly situated as a spiritual master, and if they're following Sukracharya and he's engaging them in the actual Vedic processes suitable for their position in Tama, Rajas or Sattva, and dedicating all those mantras Om Tat Sat to the Supreme, even if it's only an impersonal understanding, if that's all they have, then they're heading in the right direction. Even though it may not be perfect because there's a greater spiritual understanding to be had, but they're heading in the right direction. All, even if they're following at least to the impersonal concept of the Absolute Truth, that is also Krishna. That's the first beginning of understanding the personality of Godhead, that impersonal Brahman rests upon him. Without understanding at least the impersonal Brahman, that there is spirit, there's no question of going any further on the spiritual path. At least we must understand Brahman. That is a Brahminical path. At that point, any demon who would reject any of the followers of Sukracharya, who would reject his instructions, would be committing breaking one of the worst regulative principles and rejecting the spiritual master. At that point, it is a fault. And that's what is described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that was the fault. But that fault was nullified. It is a fault because if Sukracharya, broke the regular principles, he would be at fault. Now, from what we're hearing, we're discussing chapter 20 of this 8th canto, text number 1. It appears that Sukracharya was somewhat capable to understand the personal feature of Vishnu as the Absolute Truth. But due to offence, that level of realisation he did not act upon or consider at the time that Bali Maharaj offered everything to Vishnu. So, according to past association and past studies and past realizations, at this particular point, as described by Vishwanath Chakravarti at the core, that, you know, this a commentary to 8.20.14, Daiva Prahita means that Sukracharya was influenced by previous offense, unfavourable for developing the bliss of prema to the Lord. Now, let's see the different statements that Prabhupada makes about that. In Text number 2 of chapter 20 of the 8th canto. Prabhupada says this. Sukracharya, being a person of this material world, did not know the principles of a devotee. That's in the purport. So, you know, it appears that from what Prabhupada is saying, that this may have been somewhat of a permanent situation by Sukracharya, is to be on this mundane platform, a mundane concept of the Absolute Truth, which means that you can only understand up to the impersonal feature or interact on that level. And, you know, some previous activities in past life, this life, I'm not sure what that is. It's not mentioned there. But despite the fact that he would have so much association and be studying the Vedas, somehow he could not go past that point. And therefore, he was acting basically as a spiritual master with an impersonal understanding of the Absolute Truth, which means that, you know, Om Tat Sat, everything is dedicated to the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is Vishnu, yes. And, you know, because it's impersonal, Shiva is equal to Vishnu, and this one is equal to Vishnu, and it's like that. So, now let's. Prabhupada also says this. If we look at the purport to verse number 11, chapter 20, canto 8, chapter verse number 11. Now, there. Again, we have discussed this verse from the Vishnu Purana 389. Several times we've quoted this from the Gita, from chapter 23, I think we quoted again. And then here, which, you know, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is worshipped by the proper execution of prescribed duties in the system of Varnasrama. There is no other way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? One must ultimately worship Lord Vishnu, and for that purpose, the Varnasrama system organized society into Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Brahmacharis, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasis. Bali Maharaj, having been perfectly educated in devotional service by his grandfather, Pallad Maharaj, knew how things are to be done. He was never to be misguided by anyone, even a person who happened to be his so-called spiritual master. So, we see in this purport that basically Sukracharya was misguiding and not following this principle. We get to verse 14. The purport says that the difference between the behavior of Bali Maharaj and that of his spiritual master, Sukracharya, and notice, as we've said, he's always referred to as a spiritual master. But he says that Bali Maharaj had already developed love of Godhead, whereas Sukracharya, being merely a priest of routine rituals, had not. That Sukracharya was never inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to develop in devotional service. And further down, we've got devotees who are actually engaged in devotional service with faith and love are inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vaishnavas are never concerned with ritualistic smart brahmanas. And it says here that therefore in this verse the word deva prahita, being inspired by the Supreme Lord, is important. Shukracharya should have encouraged Bali Maharaj to give everything to Lord Vishnu. This would have been the sign of love for the Supreme Lord, but he did not do so. On the contrary, he wanted to punish his devotee disciple by cursing him. And as we said there, that Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kaur referred to that in his commentary to the first verse, that, you know, that Deva Prahita indicates that Sukracharya was influenced by a previous curse unfavourable for developing the bliss of devotional service, love of God. So, therefore we see that this Sukracharya, he was a spiritual master, but the devotional aspect, the personal aspect of the absolute truth, he had not been inspired to develop that level of awareness and consciousness. Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kaur saying that, you know, due to previous offence, it was unfavourable for him to develop that. The Lord didn't allow that. Yet we see that because Sukracharya, as mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kaur, he was very affectionate to Bali Maharaj, which is part of his bewilderment why he acted in such a way. He was on a non-devotional platform of understanding the absolute truth, and at the same time, partly out of his affection for Bali Maharaj and partly out of his own personal attachment to fruitive activities, he said, don't give everything to Vishnu. Yeah. So, up until this point, any person following Sukracharya is actually properly situated, that they are following the Vedic principles. We had a big discussion on this. We spent at least an hour and a half or something. It was me and Nirmala and Gretchen the bed. We ransacked the Bhagavad Gita from chapter 4, verses 13, 12 and 13, and then chapter 17. Chapter 17 indicating that even though that all sacrifices, austerities and charities should be done within the Varnasram according to the Shastras guiding the Varnasram society under the instruction of the spiritual master. And it doesn't matter whether you, and they can be done by those in Tamaguna, by those in Rajaguna, by those in Sattvaguna, according to their appropriate position, but if it is done om tat sat, dedicated to the Supreme, those people will rise above the animal platform of life. They will not descend into hellish species or hellish life, and they will gradually promote it to the absolute truth. Therefore, Sukracharya is properly situated in guiding such persons, and the persons who followed him were properly situated, even though they're all on a material platform, with at least an impersonal concept of the absolute truth. And at that point, if any of them had to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, it would have constituted one of the greatest breaking the regulative principles to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, which would have left them then having no other recourse but to descend into animal life and in the next life into lower species of life. See? So that was the fault that's mentioned in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that there was a fault. And Bali Maharaj is rejecting the spiritual master. He's completely from that platform. In other words, it cannot be compared to where we say that the spiritual masters sometimes in ISKCON break the regulative principles. They actually not properly situated, either materially or spiritually, that they should then be rejected and one should accept another spiritual master. That is a different thing because they're not properly situated. On a material platform, at least with an impersonal understanding of the absolute truth, Sukhacharya was actually properly situated and he wasn't breaking any of the regular principles of the Vedas. Okay? So that you cannot compare the two. The one may say, you know, oh, if we reject, you know, if we accept that Bali Maharaj is considered to have a fault by rejecting Sukhacharya, then you're saying that we shouldn't reject an ISKCON guru who falls down. So that's right. No, they cannot be compared. They're two different, you know, like comparing apples and oranges. Or pomegranates and grapes. So, then, but because Bali Maharaj actually rejected his spiritual master because he had a proper spiritual understanding, that fault is nullified and not considered. And therefore there was no fault on the behalf of Bali Maharaj. There's a fault from the material platform which is nullified. In the same way that the gopis, they shouldn't have, as Naveen was pointing out last week, they shouldn't have, you know, left their husbands and their babies and, you know, like that. That's a fault. But because it was for Krishna, there is no fault. So if anyone does, one cannot break the... Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this point. Chapter 3. In verse 16 he says, my dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifices established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. On the material platform, those demons, without a sense of Krishna consciousness, of Vaishnavism, who reject Sukhacharya, they actually give up that process of the Vedic process. They then cast down. Their whole life is in vain. They're not making purification. They're living like animals. The Vedas would have raised them above that animal platform and they'll be cast down into lowest hellish species. So that's not good. But who can give up those Vedic principles, such as accepting a spiritual master who is basically not on the Vaishnava platform? These persons can do that, and that was Bali Maharaj's position. Verse 17, but for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization and who is fully satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. So for Bali Maharaj, he no longer had a duty to the material obligations of even accepting a material a family, you know, or a materially situated spiritual master. Right? So, and Prabhupada says in the purport, a person who is fully Krishna conscious and who is fully satisfied by his acts in Krishna consciousness no longer has any duty to perform. Due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety within is instantly cleansed, an effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. By such clearing of consciousness, one becomes fully confident of his eternal position in relationship with the Supreme. His duty becomes self-illuminated by the grace of the Lord, and therefore he no longer has any obligations to the Vedic injunctions. Such a Krishna-conscious person is no longer interested in material activities and no longer takes pleasure in material engagements like wine, women and similar infatuations. Any of the followers who give up the principles of following Sukracharya will just be addicted, live a life of sense gratification and give up the process of purification. Whereas one who takes pleasure in the self, Prabhupada mentioned the pleasure in the self means that they understand I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. That's what taking pleasure in the self is. Those persons, even if they give up all the Vedic injunctions, even up to giving them the spiritual master who's teaching us those Vedic principles according to sattva, rajas and tamas, that person doesn't fall down because their Krishna consciousness means that they have they're not attracted. They're attracted, that devotional relationship they have with the Lord frees them from attraction to just sense gratification in this world. And because of their devotion to the Lord, they're getting they're getting the results of many, many, many sacrifices over millions and millions of lifetimes instantly by constantly serving the Lord. That was Balamat. Therefore, there is no fault. There's no fault of sense gratification. There's no fault of falling. And there's no fault of not performing activity. Yajna. Okay, any questions on that? Any minutes?
So, did Nirmala
actually... Oh, there you go. Nirmala looked very happy. Nirmala and I had a big debate. Nirmala and Sweta, you know, two of my favourite students because they're good debaters. Really good. Yeah. So we had a discussion. I think we went, how long did we go? Last about an hour, 2 hours?
That was for 2 hours.
2 hours. We had a 2 hour debate. But very good. Very good discussion.
1 point.
Yeah. On this 1 point. Because it started when we read the Brihad Bhagavatam. The Brihad Bhagavatam reader said that because of the fault in Bali Maharaj of giving up the spiritual master. And that's why we sort of had to look at that, you know, because we have to stick to Shastra and understand how that can be when there is no fault. And so what we've looked at is that, in other words, and it comes down to this, that if Sukracharya was at fault, then there's no fault of Bali Maharaj rejecting him. But actually, on the material platform, Sukracharya is properly situated. And he was also properly situated by teaching people to follow the Vedas and dedicating everything to the Absolute Truth. At least he had the impersonal understanding of the Absolute Truth, which most gurus and spiritual masters and brahmanas in India, that's the minimum they have. But if one gives up at least that preliminary spiritual master, then that is a great fault. That person has no hope of purification. You know.
So what would happen if Bali Maharaj obeyed Sukracharya and did not give?
Then he would have been at fault. No, because he had a spiritual understanding. If one doesn't have a spiritual understanding, one should follow the spiritual master who at least understands that everything should be dedicated to the Absolute Truth. But they only have an impersonal concept of the Absolute Truth. On the spiritual platform, if we understand that the Absolute Truth is personal, then we should, the same, dedicate everything to the Absolute Truth in the same way. But it should be done in a through the Vaishnava principles of surrender. Either way, one has to follow the Vedic processes. So We either follow the Vedic process where we're on the material platform, and at least we're heading towards the understanding of Brahman, that there is an absolute truth, one should one should dedicate everything to the absolute truth and attain freedom from the cycle of birth and death. But one should not live in this world as a human for sense gratification like the animals, because that doesn't lead to liberation in any form. It leads to degradation into demoniac species of life. So either way... either way, you know, the choice is you follow the Vedic process and rise above the animal life and attain liberation from the cycle of birth and death, or at least, you know, elevate at least to the heavenly planets, you know, live a pious life, come back, try and get up there again. But the Vedas don't recommend to live like an animal according to sense gratification and, you know, suffer and cause suffering for others. So one has to follow that Vedic process. But above that Vedic process, it actually teaches that you can find that even that impersonal liberation is not, although it may be far greater than going to the heavenly planets, still one actually is not stable there in that liberation. And the real stability of liberation is the going to the Vaikuntha planets. Either way, one has to follow that Vedic process of heading towards, you know, being linked with the Supreme, not linked with the illusory material world. So that would be it. The fault is to not follow the Vedic process under the guidance of the spiritual master. That is a fault. Whether you are following the... you're on a materialistic platform, in Tamaguna, you still have to follow the Vedas under spiritual master. Otherwise it's a fault. Or if you're on the spiritual platform, understanding there's a personal God, you still have to follow the Vedic process under the spiritual master. Although we understand that certain aspects of the Vedas, which are for people in Sattva, Rajas and Tamas, we can leave them aside and accept only those principles which are conducive to bhakti. Okay, now, any other comments or questions on that?
So, by the mercy of Guru, one gets Krishna.
Yeah.
But in this case, Shukracharya was not the right Guru because he was not directing in the devotional service. So, did Bali Maharaj needed a Guru at all?
Well, he came under Prahlad Maharaj and Narada Muni.
Yeah.
So because Prahlad Maharaj was a disciple of Narada Muni, and Bali Maharaj was accepting his teachings, and he also comes under Narada Muni. And Prahlad is teaching in the teachings of Narada Muni. Now, from a spiritual platform, so we're all clear on that, that, you know, therefore the scriptures can say Bali Maharaj was at fault. Because Shukracharya was actually properly situated as a guru, teaching the Vedic principles to demons to help purify them, stop them from becoming animalistic and descending. He's teaching, they're going upwards under Shukracharya. He didn't break the Vedic principles there. His ability to teach them the Vaishnava principles was what's the word? Stifled, stunted. And therefore, Bali Maharaj was able to go the next step as he wanted to, as he heard from Prahlad Maharaj, but Sukracharya wasn't. And therefore, he thought he was making a mistake. So, you know, as we see that from the materialistic platform, you know, material considerations are more prominent. And one should maintain oneself. So, you know, Sukracharya was, you know, he tried to prevent Prahlad Maharaj from what he thought was a mistake. But actually, Prahlad Maharaj was operating on a higher spiritual platform. So, what would have been a material mistake was completely nullified. Now, above and beyond that, on the spiritual platform, we, you know, therefore, if we understand, well, if Bali Maharaj was, you know, his fault was nullified, then perhaps Lord Vamadeva would be heavy-handed. that'd be the next point, isn't it? So there's a nullification of any fault because he did the right thing. So still he was arrested, bound, and sent to the hellish planets. So, now, of course, in saying that, perhaps Lord Vamadeva may have been too cruel, a bit mean to Bali Maharaj. Does not nullify that on one level there was, a fault was there of rejecting your spiritual master, but because it was on the material platform, that was nullified. You see? So in other words, we say, oh, Bali Maharaj, Lord Vamadeva seem to be very harsh to Bali. So that's what we might say, oh, he was like that because of Bali Maharaj's faults. But you can't say that because Bali Maharaj's faults are nullified. But, you know, again, in the Bihad Bhagavatam Rita, that's discussed. Do you want to hear that? Anyone? No?
No.
If Lord Vamadeva is really harsh to Bali Maharaj, then perhaps there was a lot more fault in Bali than we're considering. But no, that's not the point. It's actually, everything the Lord does with his devotee is on the absolute truth. Whether if he punishes a devotee or rewards a devotee, it gives the same benefit, the same absolute benefit, and the same absolute transcendental bliss, because the Lord is absolute. So, Anyway, bear in mind, from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the reason that the fault in Bali on one level was picked up, and that is because Lord Shiva was speaking to Narada Muni was speaking to Lord Shiva, who was the greatest devotee, and Lord Shiva was saying that Banasura and Bali Maharaj were delivered and gained the mercy of the Lord because of how glorious, because of how much the Lord loved Prahlad Maharaj. And therefore he was saying, it wasn't, you know, Lord Vamana didn't, it wasn't all because of Bali's glorious devotional service that he was rewarded, because there was some fault there. That's why he was mentioning those things. Although it was nullified. But he certainly did turn the universe verse upside down, which is a, you know, practically an eternal way that this universe functions, where Lord Vishnu establishes the demigods in the heavenly planets and the demons in the lower. So, you know, that's certainly quite a disruption in universal affairs. It's a slap in the face to Lord Vishnu.
That was again advised by
Sukracharya. Well, was it advised by him?
Yeah.
Did he advise him to do it? No.
Yes.
Did he?
Yeah,
what did he say?
No, he acted
on
his advice.
On whose advice?
On Sukracharya's advice. To even conquer the heavenly planets.
So, Sukracharya, you're saying that Sukracharya said to Bali, you should go and conquer? Or was Bali Maharaj saying, I want to conquer, you help me to do that? That part of the pastime. What is that, can you quote that? What did it? Which way did it happen? Did Bali Maharaj, was he intent on? What's that?
He intended to do it,
and therefore, under the guidance of Sukracharya, that was fulfilled.
But then, if he was a real guru, he should have not asked him to do it.
He should have stopped. He should have, because that time Bali Maharaj was acting totally under his guidance. In fact, he told him that if you do all the yajna and all, you can retain the position. Yeah. In fact, he was... Yes, but this does come back to this material concept of God, that, you know, if Vishnu is saying that my followers, the demigods, their family, they can reside in heaven. Well, you know, if Lord Shiva is one with the absolute truth, why can't his followers reside there? You know, if God is one on the you know, they're still following the absolute truth. That, why not Shiva? You know, a lot of the demons, they like to worship Lord Shiva. So why not his followers? So it comes back to, you know, one's as good as the other. But it's particularly Vishnu, because one is not as good as the other. So that universal situation, you know, that age-old system where the demigods, that line, they rule the upper planets and the demons rule the lower planet, that's established by Vishnu. And because he is supreme amongst all the demigods, one cannot say that, well, if the absolute truth means that all the demigods, you know, or especially the, you know, personalities like Shiva and Brahma are equal with, you know, why not their followers, the people who worship them, like, you know, Hiranyakasipu worship Brahman. You know, why can't he then, you know, because you're still following the absolute truth, Brahma's as good as the absolute truth, or Shiva's followers. Why does it have to be Vishnu if the absolute truth is one? So, you know, it comes back to this material misconception of the absolute truth. No, actually the absolute truth is a person, and that person is one person, as Vishnu, not Shiva, not Brahma. But Bali Maharaj wanted to, as far as I understand, he wanted to attain the heavenly planets, and Sukracharya helped to facilitate that with an impersonal understanding of the run into the universe, because not understanding that Vishnu is the actual, he is the absolute truth, and others are not equal.
Okay, let us say that Bali Maharaj wanted it and Sukracharya had facilitated it,
mm-hmm.
but then the fault, all this like, is greater for the guru than for the person who does it. Like, for example, same thing when Jay and Vijay are cursed. Krishna comes and he says, oh, they are my followers, so if it's their fault, it's my fault.
Yeah.
So, in fact, he immediately comes to protect them. So then, the fault is basically Sukracharya's.
That may be part of the offence that Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, is referring to as to why he, you know, couldn't attain a level of understanding and acting on the spiritual platform of Vaishnavism. Yeah.
So in the next Manvantara, when Bali Maharaj becomes Indra, does he become a demigod, or does he become, still remains a demon, but he becomes, takes the post of Indra?
No, he becomes a demigod, Indra. He becomes Indra, demigod Indra. But because this is a spiritual activity, it's quite likely he will have remembrance of these pastimes as Bali. He may not necessarily have to change bodies, I'm not sure. Most likely not. So, now, so
I think that interesting point is there. You can also say that Krishna used Sukracharya, because it is mentioned in Bhagavatam that Sukracharya, as there is a line there, stimulated by Vamana, he says it. There is a line.
Yeah.
That was interesting. Sukracharya, he is, Krishna induces him to say that, something like that.
Yeah. In the commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, on that section, he does say, you know, in chapter 20 of that eighth canto, that Sukracharya is also very dear to the Lord. Therefore, you know, he got to engage in those pastimes. His impersonal understanding, which does gradually lead to offences when you turn the universe upside down, you know, topsy-turvy, was purified. And he also got the benefit of being with Bali in the Sutala Loka, where he also could get the association of the Lord and continue to develop that devotional attitude in association of both Prahlad, Bali Maharaj, and the Lord himself. So he's obviously very dear to him.
No, that is understandable.
Yeah.
That Krishna, with his understanding, he wanted to rectify the situation, he used Sukhacharya to do that.
Yeah.
Like, of course, as you pointed out,
mm-hmm.
for Krishna, a Brahmana, opposing a Brahmana is not a thing, but there it's mentioned that when Krishna tells Aditi that because he is protected by Brahmana,
mm-hmm.
He wants to use another means.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So as Brahmana,
he mentions that.
Well, you know, one thing I've always considered, when you look at the universe, right, this universe is basically a prison. Everyone in it. And yet, you know, for those who are pious, they get to enjoy, you know, this world. You know, the misery is there, birth, death, old age, but not necessarily to the same intensity as those who are very sinful. And therefore, you know, they get to enjoy not nice walks in the forest and, you know, lots of nice birds and you know, hummings of bees and so many things. Now, so that enjoyment where the world, you know, those nice places on earth where pious people live and enjoy that, the Lord is using the sinful living entities as the background for their enjoyment. In other words, those who have been cast down into these hellish species of life, trees and so many things, by their sinful activities, the Lord is also using them as a backdrop for the enjoyment of the pious people. So every living entity in this world, the Lord is utilizing. Everyone follows the Lord's path in all respects. So they get cast down into this, you know, demoniac species of life, and the Lord's saying, I need a bumblebee over here, I need a little spider over here, I need this here, I need, you know, some insects here, because those insects, you wouldn't want to be in the insects, because they're all eating each other up, they gobble each other up, you know, they eat each other's legs and heads and, you know, everything. You wouldn't want to be that. But those insects are actually maintaining the food chain. You know, currently the scientists are saying that the insects are disappearing at an alarming rate, that already the food chain is being broken down. So they're cast down into these horrible demoniac species, but they actually provide the food chain by which everyone depends upon. So everyone follows the Lord's path in all respects. What to speak of someone like Sukracharya, that the Lord could not also utilize him for his purposes, which one helps to purify him, and then he's also the exact person to be used in relationship with his pastime, Bali Maharaj. But because he is a Brahmin, because there must be, and because he, Bali Maharaj is very dear to him, and he must also have some blessings from Prahlad Maharaj. But you know, in this way, there is some, he does have, he describes it that he is also considered very dear to the Lord.
No, that is fine. That is how Krishna, basically, he cleverly uses a situation to basically give the thought to Sukracharya that, okay, you curse. And so Sukracharya curses. And so whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, in a parallel situation, when the Brahmana's wives,
mm-hmm.
they are leaving their, they are rejecting their Brahmana husbands,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to Krishna. They're the same Brahmana wives at that time. After that, they're glorified, of course, and Krishna gives their husbands the intelligence to accept them back and actually glorify them. So there, they are not criticized for breaking any rules or regulations. Not because their husbands were following the ritualistic ceremony. They were doing the right, I mean, as far as they are concerned, they were all very serious, they were doing the sacrifices and all according to how they knew. And the wives had prepared the offerings to be put in the yagna. And suddenly the wives and all, they take everything and they go because they want to serve Krishna. It's, I find that a parallel. And then afterwards, Krishna reciprocates with them, and then when they are sent back, Krishna gives the husband the intelligence. So they are not criticized, saying that, oh, you broke all regulative principles. They are not criticized.
Mm. But still, that,
Maharaj,
yeah, but still.
Mani Maharaj is here,
yeah.
saying that you have rejected. So because basically the husband is a spiritual master. For the wives, the Brahmana wives, their husband was a spiritual master. That is a Vedic system.
Yeah, that's right. And they also
and so
reject,
they have rejected their
that's
spiritual
a fault
master.
On the material platform.
Yeah,
that
but
is
it's never said in Brihad Bhagavatam
no.
that they were at fault. It's, they are actually praised. They are only praised. But here Bali Maharaj is criticized.
What's pointed out is that Lord Shiva is describing that it was not just because Lord Shiva is such a great devotee that therefore when he intervened on behalf of Banasura, therefore Krishna saved Banasura. Nor was Banasura, you know, a great devotee. He was very good, and he offended Aniruddha and did so many terrible things. And then he described it also, you know. So what Lord Shiva is saying, it's not because of me being a great devotee that Banasura was delivered, and it's not because of Banasura was a great devotee of the Lord. And Bali Maharaj, yes, he performed these activities, but, you know, still that didn't warrant what Lord Vamanadeva gave him. And that's why, so he's not saying that he was only at fault. He was acknowledging, yes, the devotion of Lord Bali was there, of Bali Maharaj was there, but there had to be something more as to why the Lord gave such a wonderful result. And it wasn't seen because when he looked at, you know, all of it together, including the devotional aspect and the events leading up to that, he concluded that Prahlad Maharaj's mercy must be the reason why both Bali Maharaj and Banasura got such extraordinary results. And he was saying that explains everything, rather than to look at them as being great devotees or as me, Lord Shiva, being as great devotees. That's why he explained it. So he wasn't saying, he wasn't just pointing out that Bali Maharaj was, you know, just, he was pointing out his devotional activities were certainly wonderful, and then comparing some of the faults that led up to that and what he offered, there had to be something more as to why he got such a result. So that's what we're going to look at now. That was Lord Vamana cruel or was he wonderful? And how? So, now, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter 47, text number 17, there's this verse. As far as I understand, this is Srimad Radharani talking to the bumblebee. Like a hunter, he cruelly shot the king of the monkeys with arrows. So she's talking about Krishna and his different incarnations. Because he was conquered by a woman. So she's describing it. And you know, he disfigured another woman who came to him with lusty desires. Even after consuming the gifts of Bali Maharaj, he bound him up with ropes as if he were a crow. So let us give up all friendship with this dark complexion boy, even if we can't give up talking about him. So now we're looking on the spiritual platform, you know, a little more deeply. Now, Prabhupada mentions in this purport, in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that the bull, Srila Prabhupada explains the meaning of this verse as follows. Srimati Radharani said to the bumblebee, so he's quoting Prabhupada's book, you poor messenger, you are only a less intelligent servant. You do not know much about Krishna, how ungrateful and hard-hearted he has been, not only in this life, but in his previous lives also. We have heard from our grandmother, Purnamasi. She has informed us that Krishna was born in a Kshatriya family previous to this birth and was known as Ramchandra. In that birth, instead of killing Vali, an enemy of his friend, in the manner of a Kshatriya, he killed him just like a hunter. A hunter takes a secure hiding place and then kills an animal without facing it. So Lord Ramchandra as a Kshatriya should have fought with Vali face to face, but instigated by his friend, he killed him from behind a tree. Thus he deviated from the religious principles of a Kshatriya. Now, then it continues in this purport, quoting Prabhupada's Krishna book. Also, he was so attracted by the beauty of Sita that he converted Supanika, the sister of Ravana, into an ugly woman by cutting off her nose and ears. Supanika proposed an intimate relationship with him, and as a Kshatriya, he should have satisfied her. But he was so henpecked that he could not forget Sita Devi and converted Supanika into an ugly woman. Before that birth, as a Kshatriya, he took birth as a Brahmana boy known as Vamana Dev and asked charity from Bali Maharaj. Bali was so magnanimous that he gave him whatever he had. Yet Krishna, as Vamana Dev, ungratefully arrested him just like a crow and pushed him down to the Batala kingdom. So, of course, this also may be one reason why we may get disturbed at seeing Bali as having a fault. Therefore, he had to be punished. You know, that's... So, Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, commenting on this part, he says, when Krishna appeared previously as Vamana, a dwarf Brahmana, to reject the qualities of the Brahmana, such as peacefulness and straightforwardness. After enjoying the offerings made by Bali, Vamana cast Bali down from his lordship of the three worlds into a hole below the earth. Or you may say that Krishna deceitfully tied up Bali just like a crow. A crow devours the offerings meant for worship and then, calling other crows, surrounds the woman doing puja and mocks her. Similarly, Vamana called his own people, who then surrounded Bali and tormented him. So basically, Radharani is, you know, saying, be very careful of this Krishna. We shouldn't really have much to do with him, although we can't stop talking about him. So, now Prabhupada goes on in the Krishna book, chapter 47, to say this. Since Krishna is absolute, his so-called unkind activities are as relishable as his kind activities. Therefore, saintly persons and great devotees like the gopis cannot give up Krishna in any circumstances. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya prayed, Krishna, you are free and independent in all respects. You can either embrace me or crush me under your feet, whatever you like. You may make me broken-hearted by not letting me see you throughout my whole life, but you are my only object of love. Now, here, in this Mathura meets Vrindavan, that's Gaura Govinda Swami, he's also discussing this same section. I won't read it all, but I'll read this part. Your master came as the son of Kashyapa Varunadeva. He was a nice Brahmana Brahmachari. What fault was there with Bali Maharaj? Bali Maharaj offered him worship. So he's sort of paraphrasing Radharani, this section. He's paraphrasing the Srimad Bhagavatam. He washed his feet and gave him a nice seat. He treated him so nicely. Varunadeva had very little feet. He only begged 3 pieces of land, and Bali Maharaj promised to give it to him. But this dwarf Varunadeva, with his tiny little feet, was actually a great juggler. When Bali Maharaj gave 1 piece of land, his feet became so inconceivably, unimaginably great that with 1 step his foot covered the whole surface of the globe, then with the other foot he covered all space. He is such a great juggler. It is possible that something small can be inside of something big, but how is it that such a big, inconceivable thing is there within a small thing? His feet are so tiny. How did they become so great? As mere jivas, we cannot conceive it. It is only jugglery, nothing else. Then your master asked Bali for space for a third step. Where shall I put my third step? Bali Maharaj thought, where can he put his third step? He covered everything with 2. Then Radharani said, So he's quoting this section, he's sort of paraphrasing this section from Srimad Bhagavatam. A person walking along, carrying a pot on his head filled with food, a crow comes, takes some food from the pot, and not being satisfied, at the same time pecks his beak on the head of that person. Your master, Vamana, did just like that. Bali gave him everything to Varunadeva. He treated him nicely, offered him respect to him, and worshipped him. Then what did Varuna do? He bound up Bali with the ropes of belonging to Varuna. So Bali said, "All right, I've given everything, but I've not completely dedicated myself." Then putting his head forward, he said, "Please put your third foot on my head." He became completely surrendered. But what did your friend do? He treated Bali mercilessly. He pushed him down to Patala. What was Bali's fault? Why did he treat him so mercilessly? Radharani said, "Do you understand why he, Vamana, is this way, you bumblebee? It is a question of this sham, black colour, nothing else. All black coloured people do this. Now, then the bumblebee was humming. Why are you saying about my friend, my master, that he has so many faults? Why am I finding fault with your master? I will tell you why. A nice sober person, a gentleman, only speaks good things. He never speaks bad things. So if you don't want to hear, then get out of here. Why are you just hovering here and not going away? All right, I'll tell you. Your friend and master, Shyam, has already given us up. We had an intimate friendship with him, but he has broken that friendship and gone away. He has not kept up his word. He has given up friendship with us, and we have given up friendship with him. But still, we cannot give up this katha. He told us, I will come back. Only by remembering this katha, we are surviving. His katha is so enchanting. His katha is so attractive. His katha is so sweet and nectarian that we cannot give it up. He is acting in such a way that we would have died. But we cannot die because we are remembering his katha. Such is our condition. We are neither dying nor surviving. He is a merciless, cruel person. Now, so if we discuss Krishna's merciless sort of nature in properly in regard to, you know, loving affections in regard to Vamanadeva, then regarding Lord Vamanadeva, when Bali Maharaj completely dedicated himself at the lotus feet of Vamanadeva and offered his head as the place for Vamana to place his third step, he thereby became a Mahajan. He set the example of complete surrender, Atmanivedanam. Although Lord Vamana pushed Bali down to Batala, he gave him all opulence. Actually, he didn't bind Bali. Rather, by his complete surrender, Bali bound Lord Vamanadeva with the rope of love. The Lord became his doorkeeper and stayed there. Vamanadeva became bound up by the rope of love. So how are these merciless dealings? The Lord is so merciful. This is tattva vichara. You see? So basically, if we actually analyze, as is done in the, as we'll do in the 10th canto, the Lord's dealing. So this is the beginning. So, because we have to understand these harsh activities of Bali Maharaj as if Bali's got some fault. Now, Lord Shiva is saying this fault because he wants to he doesn't want to accept glory himself. So he's sort of just pointing out that, you know, yes, Bali's devotion is there, but compared to, you know, it's not enough to get that reaction from the Lord, and it must be attributed to Prahlad. So out of love for Prahlad and out of humility for himself, he's pointing out some fault in Bali. So it's a matter of transcendental loving exchanges, humility and what have you. Then, you know, on the question of, then if Bali is, you know, we accepted Prahlad, he got so much mercy because of Prahlad's love, and yet still Vamanadeva treated him so mercifully as if he did have so much fault. No. That also, it appears like that, but his mercy is absolute, and Lord Vamanadeva was actually, you know, if you look at it all, he didn't take anything away from him. He actually gave him more than Indra. And he didn't, you know, he Satara Loka, became his doorkeeper, so the personalities like Ravana who would attend those places couldn't have access and attack him. And and also, you know, the point of being bound, in actuality, he actually became bound by Bali. So, you know, there's a lot of these things are, let's say, transcendental loving exchanges on the platform of bhakti between one Vaishnava and another, and between the Lord and his and the Vaishnavas, and they have to be understood on that platform. Materially, there are some faults that have to be considered. If we don't understand these introductory concepts that appear in there of Bali Maharaj, there's no way we're going to understand, you know, when Radharani says, you know, don't have anything to do with him, you know, this black person, you know, acting in such a low-grade person, you know, he's merciless, ruthless, you know. We don't want anything to do with him. So heartless, not just now, but in his previous lives. He's just got this nature in him like that. How are we going to understand those things? This is an introduction. There's, you know, so fault can be there and it can be pointed out. But a lot of this is being done, one, for the tattva, to understand the difference between material and, you know, material fault, which is nullified by spiritual activity, and also to understand transcendental reciprocation. So there's actually so much here, you know, to meditate upon. Anyway, we'll just leave it there. There's some food for thought.
Can we say that actually Bali Maharaj in one way was Vamadeva was testing Bali Maharaj and also giving an opportunity to see how, show how great he was.
Yes, he
by
was.
By fighting him and seeing that even there he was not at all angry.
He wanted to show Bali Maharaj's greatness, that this is Atmanivedana. Anyone who says they surrender to God, this is surrender to God.
And also he was testing him to see whether he's...
Yeah, he was testing, but at the same time he was giving him every ability and opportunity to act upon what he knew was in his heart, and he could understand it was in his heart, and he said, if I set the scene, that's what he'll do. Sukracharya, you're saying that the Lord inspired him. In the same way, he understood what was in Sukracharya's heart, that I won't surrender everything to Vishnu, you know, because of this impersonal concept. There are other considerations. So inspiring him meant that you have faith in this, you know, impersonal way of, you know, guiding people through the Vedas. When this situation arises, you will show the world the limitations and the foolishness of this materialistic type of ritualistic brahmana. So inspiring meant that I will not allow you to understand the devotional attitude. That's how he inspired Sukracharya. I won't let you understand more than that. And because I won't let you, and you are a materialistic, acting on as a materialistic guru, you'll definitely curse him like that. So it's not as if he's sort of, it's almost like a foregone conclusion. That's his inspiration. Okay, so next week we only got a few verses and we've covered so much tattva that next week when we begin from where we left off, which is chapter 23, verse, we got up to, Nirmala, we covered a lot today. We went through half the Gita, half the scriptures, and a lot of this. We got up to text number 18, right? No, 19. We're up to text number 19. Yeah, we're up to text number 19. Yeah. And there's not a lot of purport, so we'll finish that in about 5 minutes. Read it at home, and then we'll finish that, and then we're going to do the incarnation of Lord Matsya which shouldn't take us, you know, we'll finish, yeah. Oh, there's 61 verses, but it's quite possible we'll do pretty much that whole thing. So, and that'll conclude the eighth canto, and then we'll have a discussion about things the following week. All right? So, all those should be right.